Through the story of Job, we learn how to deal with loss. Here's Pastor Dave Rolfe with a preview of today's Balanced Word.
It doesn't just go, oh, here's the trial, here's an immediate solution, and they all lived happily ever after. No, when we are in pain, when we are feeling loss, when we hurt, sometimes that dark night of the soul just goes on and on. It doesn't get resolved immediately. And sometimes in some ways, some of it never gets resolved. And we see that in the book of Job.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hand. And the instrument I play. Wake up my voice. Let the world hear me say, you are worshipped and exalted here today.
Whether it's someone grieving over the loss of a loved one, a friend given disturbing news about their own health, or you're dealing with financial ruin, we'll all suffer and experience loss to one degree or another. We often wish at such times God would give us some answers, but the Lord doesn't always do that, as the story of Job points out. Today on The Balanced Word, we open up Job, which will help us know how to deal with loss. It's part of our Through the Bible in Stories series with Pastor Dave Rolfe.
Well, today for our Bible study, let's turn to the book of Job. Job can be kind of a depressing book in some ways. It's a sad story. Most of us are sort of familiar with the story. But we want to look at it because we're going through the Bible in Bible stories. This is a classic story. It's an amazing story in so many ways. And so today, we're just going to look at the whole story and work our way through it. Obviously, with 42 chapters, we're not going to, this won't be a detailed study in every word, verse by verse. The story of Job. In the first chapter, Job is introduced as a guy who, well, we can look at chapter 1, verse 1. It says, there was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job. And that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil. It talks about all of his possessions there in verse 3 and said, this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. It goes on to express that he was a family man. He had 10 kids, and it says that his kids would have parties all the time, and after they had a party, Job would do sacrifices just in case the kids had done anything stupid at their parties. So he was a good, solid guy. Now, the time of this book, most people believe that Job is the oldest book in the Bible in terms of when it was written. And this story probably happened during the time of the patriarchs, around the time of Abraham or whatever. The land where he was most likely somewhere around present-day Saudi Arabia. So here's this guy, a godly man, a good man, a man who had a relationship with God, very unusual in those days, as you know. And he was really well off. Life had treated him well. But as the story begins to unfold, you have this weird, it's a strange story, really, that the sons of God, which is most likely a reference to angels, and the devil along with them come to heaven and talk to God. And God is asking him, what have you been doing? It's strange, but this is the story. This is what it says. And so Satan, God was like talking to Satan. And then he goes, by the way, have you noticed Job? Look at what a good man he is. And the devil said, well, sure, he's a good man. Look, he's got a great family. He's wealthy, has great business interests. He's got it all. So, of course, if you bless someone like that, they're going to be good. Satan said, take away all that stuff and let's see how good he is. And the devil says, you've put a hedge around him so that he's protected. Take that hedge down or put a doorway in it and let's see what he does. Now, before we go on with the story, be careful about taking something in the Bible and then making a general rule about it. I hear people use the scripture all the time to say to claim that Satan can't do anything without going and getting God's permission for it. I don't see the Bible saying that. He's the prince of the power of the air, and he can do things sometimes apparently without God's permission, just because in this case he did it. And this business of, oh, we have a hedge around us, I hear that all the time. Well, the only one that said there was a hedge around him was the devil. So I don't take what he says to be all that serious. But apparently in Job's case, he actually asked permission to hurt him. And in a weird sort of way, God says, you know what to do. Go ahead. Just don't touch his being. And so as the story unfolds, he, one by one, through a series of almost immediate natural disasters, his businesses were destroyed, his servants were killed, all of his animals that he had, which would have been the source of wealth in those days and business, were all destroyed. And then finally, as his seven sons and three daughters were having a party in his oldest son's house, a strong, probably a hurricane or something, came blowing through and the house fell down and his kids were killed. And only a couple of servants escaped to come back and tell Job all this stuff that had happened. Now you can just see the devil is going, this has got to do it. This has to do it. I mean, everything that he cared about is gone. And as you read through the passage, you see that Job just falls flat on his face. And he's crying out. But he says this in verse 20, after finding out that his children were dead. Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground. The devil's going, yeah, I knew it. And worshiped. Kidding me? He worshiped? Look what he said. Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. He didn't blame God, and he didn't fall into sin. He, with his last ounce of energy, worshiped God. That's crazy. Now you begin to see why God was bragging on Job. I still have a problem with, one thing for me, I don't want to be so good that God starts bragging about me to Satan. I just assume fly under the radar myself. But this guy was amazing, and you can see it. And how Satan must have been so frustrated when it's like, I did everything I could, and this guy is worshiping God. Crazy. But then in the next chapter, again, they're having one of these heavenly meetings where God's asking all the angels what they've been doing, and devil goes, you know, I'm going to and fro and throughout the earth, and as we know, he roams, like Peter said, like a roaring lion. And now, this time, without God bragging about Job, Satan just goes, you know, Job, I know what happened. I mean, yeah, he worshiped you even when he took everything. But the problem is, you didn't touch his body. And skin for skin, if you touch him personally, maybe he just didn't care that much about all his stuff or his kids, but you touch him personally and he will curse you. And so God said, do what you do. Go ahead. And Satan was able somehow to give Job, as it describes it, boils. Most commentators believe that what he got, it was very common in those days, was this elephantosis disease where you broke out with boils, but all of your limbs swelled really bad and would run, and sometimes limbs would actually fall off. It's a horrible disease. And so we see here in chapter 2, he got, you know, a sharp you know, potsherd, a piece of a broken bottle, just to scratch himself. He was so itchy, and it was so difficult, and it was miserable. And then the one family member that he has left, his wife, comes to him and says, "Why don't you just curse God and die, and I can collect the insurance?" You know, it's like, you're kidding me. I mean, we've gone through all this, but I'm the one that's hurting, and you're telling me to curse God and die? Now, some people have tried to make it that, oh, she was sympathetic for him, and she was just thinking, just get it over with, and I don't want to see you suffer like this. But remember, this is exactly what the devil said that he would do. Just, he'll curse God. And so his wife is giving him the pitch that the devil really wanted for him. I'm not saying his wife was the devil, but boy, she was not a blessing to him at this point. Now, she's never mentioned in the rest of the story. Through everything else that happens, the entire book, she's only mentioned one time, and it's kind of a passing reference where Job is complaining in chapter 19 about how miserable he is, and he says, "My wife doesn't like the way I smell." So other than that, she's not in the story. But here he has this devastating disease. And the only one left in his family, the closest one to him, is telling him to give it up and to die. And I think the devil at this point is going, okay, I got an inside job here. This is going to, now he's miserable. He's itching. His body, his wounds are running, and he's got ashes all over him, and this will do it. But look at what he said after, in verse 9 of chapter 2, when his wife said, "You're still hanging on to your integrity, curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks." By the way, guys, that's a nice thing that you can say to your wife. Don't say you're foolish. Just say, "You're speaking like those other foolish women." Because Job was righteous and he said it, so you can use that one. If you think it'll work for you. So he said, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" And in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. What an amazing faith he had to say, look, I can't let God bless me and then when things go bad, act like he's bad. We need to accept the good with the bad. It was a beautiful testimony to his confidence in God's sovereignty, and yet in realizing that you win some and you lose some. I heard a guy speaking recently. My wife and I went to a thing, and this guy had lost his family in a car accident. He was in a car accident. His mother was killed. His wife was killed. Two of his three kids were killed. And he survived with one of the children. And people would ask him, he was a college seminary professor, and people would just go, "How do you deal with this? I mean, don't you ever say, why me?" And he said, "Of course I did at first, but I got to thinking about it, and I thought, I never said, why me, when God did good things. Like, I did not deserve to have a wife like that for the years that I had her, to have those children, or to have a mother like that. And so if God gives me good things that I don't deserve, then I'm not going to gripe about the times when something happens to me that isn't good. I'm already way ahead of the game." And that's Job's attitude here. And the devil again is like going, oh man, what's it going to take to get this guy, to nail him? Well, at this point, he is in misery and he's itching and feeling horrible and he's sitting in sackcloth and ashes. And in the end of chapter 2, three of his friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, come along to visit him. And for 7 days, they just sit there with him silently. That's hard to do. It's hard to be with someone who's suffering and be with them but not say anything. But sometimes that's the best thing you can do. For his friends, this was their finest hour. They just sat there with him. And as they did, Job was suffering. And finally in chapter 3, he began to open up. And sometimes if you just sit with someone long enough, just to be with them, just to hold their hand, or I don't know if they're looking at him and going, I don't want to hold your hand, but, you know, I'm with you. And, you know, sometimes then they'll begin to open up. So in chapter 3, Job begins to open up. And this is a good thing. It's always good when you can start talking about how you feel. And so Job begins to just say, I hate that I was even born. I despise the day of my birth. I just wish it had never happened. And so he begins to complain. Now, in chapter 4, and from chapter 4 on through chapter 31, the guts of the book is a dialogue between Job and his three friends. And they are trying to, you know, Eliphaz first in chapter 4 is like going, come on, Job. You can tell us. You must have done something wrong. We always thought, oh, you were the perfect guy. You must have done something wrong for this to happen. We all deserve stuff like this. And so he begins to say it. Job responds back, no, I'm telling you, man, I didn't do anything that would deserve this. And then they all played tag teams, and each of them trying to get in there and go, let me explain this to you. Now, his friends, get this, his friends thought that they were defending God's honor. They were like, Job, you're on dangerous territory because you're actually questioning God. The funny thing is, as we find out later, God doesn't mind when you question him. He isn't insecure. He doesn't feel like, oh, you better look out because I'm going to get you if you say things about me. In the end, God said that Job had been right, that what he said was actually righteous because he was expressing the way he feels. But, you know, on through the book, it's this, and it's difficult to read. If you read the whole book of Job, as I did this week again, you just think, wow, this is tough. And when you are going through a difficult time, it's dreary. It just keeps going and going. And that's the way when you read this, he's just expressing more his misery, and his friends are trying to argue with him. And how stupid is it to argue with a guy who's, you're supposed to be there comforting him, and you end up arguing with them, and it just goes on and on. And a lot of times that's the way suffering is. That's the way trials are. It doesn't just go, oh, here's the trial, here's an immediate solution, and they all lived happily ever after. No, when we are in pain, when we are feeling loss, when we hurt, sometimes that dark night of the soul just goes on and on. It doesn't get resolved immediately. And sometimes in some ways, some of it never gets resolved. And we see that in the book of Job. Finally, after they kind of finish their thing at the end of chapter 31, a guy named Elihu comes along. Now, we don't know much about him or who he is, but apparently he's younger than the other guys. Maybe he was watching all this. Now, Elihu pipes up for 6 chapters, and Elihu tries to tell him, you know, typical of sometimes people who are younger just think they know more than old people, because they're like, yeah, you're losing it, and so let me give you a youthful perspective. And he rebukes Job's friends and goes, you guys aren't being right, but Job, you better be careful too, because God's good, and you're going to offend him, and at least he's taken sort of a middle ground. He's kind of like, look, you're both right, and you're both wrong, and let me give you the wisdom of my young years. And after chapter 36 and chapter 37, we come to chapter 38. And God interrupts Elihu. As Elihu is waxing eloquent, God's like, there's anything worse than a philosophical discussion with a bunch of old guys? It's a young guy trying to be philosophical. So God shows up. And in chapter 38, chapter 39, chapter 40, and chapter 41, God responds. Now, how often have we, in our loss, in our pain, just wished God would show up and give us some answers. And certainly that's what Job was crying for. Partly during the book, Job is like, I wish God was here right now because here's what I would tell him. So now God shows up. And you go, okay, finally we're going to get some perspective on this. But as you read what God said on through chapter 41, all God did was talk about nature. All he did was talk about the amazing creation that he had accomplished. No philosophical explanations, no theological nuance, no, you know, other than the fact that he said, your friends are wrong and you're right, but I got some questions for you. Where were you when I made the earth so that it would float there in space? Where were you when I created the dinosaurs? Where were you when I laid out the heavens? Where were you when I created the place where the sea could be there and it would only come to the land and wouldn't go further? He just began to go, and it's a beautiful discussion for four chapters of this world that God had created. Without him ever getting around to, you know, at this point you'd wish God had said, look, this all happened because you're so righteous, and Satan was like, and I were having an argument, I got kind of lost a poker game with them, and sorry, and, you know, no explanation at all. Just look at the world, look at creation. And in the end, in chapter 42, Job said, I'm sorry that I even opened my mouth. God was saying, you're righteous. And Job's like, I should have shut up, though. Everything I said, I take it back. My hand is over my mouth. I'm done. And then God attacked his friends and said, you guys need to ask him to pray for you so that you'll be forgiven because you're a mess. And Job was just like, God, you're great. And then in chapter 42, God restored. Now you go, everything that he had had before in terms of possessions, now he had twice as much. But he also had another 10 kids. He didn't end up with 20 kids because he had 10 of them in heaven and now he had 10 more on the earth. But they all lived happily ever after.
You're listening to The Balanced Word. In addition to being our teacher on the program, Dave Rolfe is the pastor of Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel in Aliso Viejo. We're going through the Bible right now in a series called Bible Stories. We have these messages archived for you at thebalancedword.com or call and request today's message on CD at 949-362-7475. And as a special appreciation gift for your donation of $10 or more, The Balanced Word is pleased to send you all of these messages in this Bible Story series on a USB thumb drive. You'll hear some of the Bible's greatest stories from Genesis through Revelation. To make a secure donation, go to thebalancedword.com or call 949-362-7475. And don't forget to ask for the Bible Story series as you give. Again, we're at thebalancedword.com. And we'd like to take this time to invite you to Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel. Our Sunday morning service times are at 8, 9:45, and 11:30. Again, we're at ccpacifichills.org if you'd like more information. Or if you're outside of the area, you can watch our live stream right there at ccpacifichills.org. Check out Pastor Dave's one-minute messages, a great way to start the day. You can listen to them at thebalancedword.com or watch them on Instagram or Facebook by following CC Pacific Hills. Now with some reflections on today's Bible story in Job, here again is Dave.
It's a beautiful discussion of pain and loss without an answer. And we have to start off right off the bat and just go, we can't expect just to have quick answers to this. But as we look at the story of Job, what do we learn? I mean, one of the things that just resonates so much is, can you worship God when you are experiencing significant loss? Because in life, you will experience significant loss. It's going to happen in different ways, sometimes when you least expect it. So when you're in pain, can I truly worship God? And Job is, wow, this is what you do when you are on your face, when you are crying, when you just feel like your life has been ripped away from you. Will you go to your face and worship? Do we have a faith that only enjoys when we get stuff? Anybody enjoys when they get stuff. The real relationship happens when we lose and we choose, do I worship or do I not? For me, the whole story of Job, to let that sink into us is just, it's huge. It's hugely important.
We'll come back to Job tomorrow on The Balanced Word and receive more helpful truths to help us deal with loss. This program is brought to you by Pacific Hills Calvary Chapel and online at thebalancedword.com.
Wake up my soul. Wake up early in the day. Wake up my hands and the instrument I play.